Before we begin today's episode of Potterless, I just wanted to thank everyone for being so great about Potterless on the internet. Let me explain. So first off, a lot of people have been interacting with me on Twitter and Facebook, which has been great. It's been a lot of fun. I love talking with you guys. Feel free to reach out. It's super fun and I love doing it. But also, people have been amazing about leaving reviews on iTunes and Facebook, which helps with our search engine optimization, which I learned is a thing. Apparently, if we're more highly rated on iTunes and stuff, if people just search Harry Potter podcast, Potterless is more likely to come up, which I think is great if someone is looking for a new Harry Potter podcast. And we show up because I'd like to think that we're a unique take on the series, and I would love more people to find it. So if you guys don't mind, if you want to leave us a little review on iTunes, that'd be great, especially if you want to give it a high rating. If you would potentially rate it 1 star, maybe don't do it. But anyway, I really do appreciate all the support. Speaking of support, we have 2 new Patreon supporters, which is fantastic, Colette Horsberg and Christopher Smith. Thank you guys so much. And as always, I want to thank our producer-level patrons, Griffin Meckelberg, Leanne Davis, and Michael Baloff, my old basketball coach, who is one of the greatest human beings ever. And I just love that I get to say my old high school basketball coach is supporting the podcast. So without further ado, let's get into the intense chapters 17 and 18. You know it's intense when we only talk about 2 chapters in an episode, guest starring Julia Schifini of Spirits Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Potterless, the tale of a 24-year-old man reading the Harry Potter novels for the first time. I am excited to bring you this episode because it is the most twisting plot mess ever, and I'm really excited for it. And I'm joined by none other than Julia Schifini of the Spirits Podcast. Julia, how are you?
I'm pretty good, and you got my name right, so I'm super excited about that.
Oh, nice. I really try to make sure I can pronounce everyone's name right. I was definitely super nervous when I did the first episode with Amanda to make sure it was actually McLaughlin and not some other pronunciation. So I try to get people's names right because it's your name. It's important a little. So for everyone who does not know, Julia is co-hosts with Amanda, who was on previous episodes of Spirits Podcast, which is an awesome little podcast about different myths and legends. And currently we're recording this on Halloween.
Yes.
The day before Halloween, but basically yeah. Halloween because it's the weekend. And they've been doing super fun Halloween episodes. Yeah. By the time I post this, it will be not October, but Spirits Podcast is fantastic. It's a really good time. You may catch me on there in the future. So I would say
yes,
check
please.
Them out for sure. But let's get into the ending chapters from chapter 17 till the end of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, aka like M. Night Shyamalan twist central.
It's a lot of really convoluted plotting, but yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really exciting. So let's just get right into it because there's so much that's happening. So chapter 17 is titled Cat, Rat, and Dog. And basically it starts off with Scabbers freaking the hell out, trying to break free from Ron's grasp as much as possible. The squad is like running away from the quote unquote death of Buckbeak. And they're trying to, you know, make sure that they are not seen in the invisibility cloak.
Which doesn't work very well in their favor.
No, it usually doesn't. Usually anytime they're trying to do something, it never works. They're like, oh, we need to like do this thing. And then it's always the opposite. It never works out as planned. As they're running away, Harry sees Crookshanks, which is bad news because Crookshanks hates Scabbers. And Scabbers is already making a scene. Ron finally gets Scabbers back. But as he does, like he gets him under control, they see a giant black dog running towards them, which of course scares Harry because of the whole the Grimm situation. Mm-hmm. Not only did they just see the dog, but the dog decides to attack them, like tackle Harry, bite Ron on the arm, and like drag him away like by his feet.
Yeah, breaks his leg too.
Yes,
straight up breaks his leg.
Yeah, he like brings him over.
No, I mean that's more Ron's fault. Like Ron tries to hook his leg to one of the roots and the dog's just like, nah, not having it.
Yeah. The dog's like, come on, get out of here. Don't you know who I am? I'm Sirius Black the dog. But yeah, it gets like super intense. The dog drags Ron over to the Whomping Willow and he like wraps his leg around the tree branch, like a root of it. And then the dog is like, nice try, and just pulls him so hard that his leg breaks.
God.
I guess like it's okay if you break limbs in Harry Potter world because Madame Pomfrey can literally just say like accio leg fix or
whatever. Yes, that's the spell right there.
Or they can use Skelligro, which is the worst named potion ever.
Oh, God.
You don't need casts or anything. So when people like break body parts, everyone's like, eh, whatever. Just go to Madame Pomfrey.
She's got this.
Yeah, she'll just be sassy and fix your body and then, you know, yell at anyone that tries to enter the hospital.
Yeah, dude, she's like real strict. She reminds me of Catholic school nuns a little bit.
Oh, for sure.
100%. Just like angry, let me do my job, you're all getting in the way kind of situation.
Yeah, totally. It's definitely a running motif of Madame Pomfrey kicking people out of the hospital. Mm-hmm. Because like every time Harry gets injured during Quidditch, which happens multiple times, like the team tries to like stay in the hospital and support him, which is like a normal thing. But she's like, everyone get out. And then later in the book, this time when it happens, it's like there's a lot of important things happening around Hogwarts. And like they're trying to figure out like if this convicted murderer is innocent or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dumbledore and Snape and Fudge are like trying to figure out like this very important thing before a man is murdered. And Madame Pomfrey's like, everyone get out. It's like, Madame Pomfrey, like, he's going to be okay. Like, you literally do magic to make sure Harry's going to be fine. I think it's okay if Dumbledore, the most important person in the world, talks to Harry. Like, I feel like it's all right.
Yeah. She takes her task very seriously.
Yeah. She is very good at what she does, though. So you got to give her props.
I mean, remember the whole basilisk paralyzing everyone kind of thing? She took that very seriously.
Yeah, she did. She did a good job. It's funny that, like, she's technically a school nurse at Hogwarts, but, like, with the frequency of how often she, like, heals people and saves people's lives, she's, like, basically, like, the head surgeon of
arguably
the most important
hospital.
Arguably
the most talented person at Hogwarts.
Yeah, it's like the top doctor in the wizarding world. It's like, okay, like, the prize med school position.
Hogwarts doctor.
Nurse at Hogwarts. Okay, so they go over to the tree. The Whomping Willow's in full force. It's smacking people. As it started doing this, I was like, what is the point of this fucking tree?
Yes.
And then finally they say it later. But for like three books, I've been like, this tree only creates problems and hurts people and breaks things.
What is the
things.
Deal with this dumbass tree?
What is its purpose? You learn later. But basically, yes. Crookshanks goes up to the tree and then touches a root and just makes it stop. All the kids are very confused.
Can we talk about for 1 second just how useless Hermione is in that scene too? Like Hermione is usually the like deus ex machina for the Harry Potter series. If something's going wrong or wrong, Hermione is the one to fix it. But in this scene, she's just like kind of hopping around. She's like, I don't know what to do, guys. I don't know what to do. Until Crookshanks just pops in. Puts
and
the paw on
the
root.
Yeah, with Crookshanks knowing so much, I was expecting Crookshanks to also be an animagi person, but then it's like a really smart cat. Like, I was trying to guess, I was like, which character have I not met yet that I know is important later in the books that like Crookshanks could be? Because he's doing a lot of things for just a cat. But yeah, I'm surprised.
So the interesting thing, I don't want to pick
continue.
Up. The interesting thing with Crookshanks is J.K. Rowling revealed in a later book that Crookshanks is actually part Kneasel, which is this weird cat demon thing that some wizards keep as pets. So they're supposed to be super intelligent and very conniving. So Crookshanks is the half conniving evil cat.
Okay. I guess that makes more sense than just
a
really
bit,
smart
yeah.
house cat.
Super smart house cat.
I was surprised that Hermione didn't know the whole Whomping Willow touch root thing, because she knows like literally everything. I feel like she would have been the one to be like, hey, if you touch this root, but maybe it's a secret on purpose.
Yeah, I guess it's not common knowledge, so Hermione wouldn't know it.
You know, she's taken 300 classes and you would think that she could learn something about a damn tree.
Damn it, Hermione.
They enter a secret passageway through the bottom of the trunk of the tree that the Marauder's map mentions goes to Hogsmeade.
Mm-hmm.
They go down and it's a slide again, which is like a very common thing in Harry Potter. Just like every secret passageway is also a slide.
I'm just wondering how they get back up it, like without
like
falling down on their face.
Really tight. Mm-hmm. Or there's someone put a rope in or something. But yeah, everything is a slide. So it goes into some rundown room and Hermione's like, oh, I think we're in the Shrieking Shack. And at first, I had to look it up because I was like, what is the Shrieking Shack? I was actually talking to my girlfriend about it while I was reading it. And I was like, mm-hmm. What is the Shrieking Shack? She was like, oh, it's that, you know, it's that haunted house that they described earlier with the whole Malfoy Mudface situation. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's why they described a random building for 2 pages.
Inaccurate.
Originally when I was reading it, I was like, okay, cool. Why are we talking about this haunted house for 2 pages? I was like, this is so silly and obnoxious.
J.K. Rowling really wants want to give you the ambiance of Hogsmeade. It's like William Golding just describes sunsets for three pages in Lord of the Flies.
Oh man, yeah. So now it all makes sense, and there's other things that like she described at length towards the end of the book that I think are going to have to come into effect later. Dumbledore goes on for like six lines about how it's like it's okay that you let Pettigrew go, Harry. I think this will come and be good in the future, and I'm like, okay, so in book seven, Pettigrew might like you know give away Voldemort's secret location, but he's not going to be good for like four more books.
Right, I feel that.
Oh man, so they think they're in the Shrieking Shack. They go upstairs to a room because they hear Ron and Crookshanks in there. And once they get inside, Ron is like, it's a trap. And right after he says it, the door slams and Sirius Black is there. And he's the black dog, but you learn he's an animagus, or which means, you know, he's an animorph, basically. He can turn into animals willy-nilly whenever he wants. So he's the black dog that Harry's been seeing all this time.
Have you talked about the significance of the black dog in mythology yet? Because
no,
I'm totally
going
to
get
in on that.
I would love to hear your take on it.
In Celtic and I think some English mythology, there is this demon dog, basically.
Okay.
If you would see it on the moors of Scotland and stuff like that, and if you saw it, it would mean that you would have death either in your family or yourself in the year following.
Okay.
So the Grim is a thing. It just has a really weird Scottish name that I can't remember right now.
Okay.
but it's an actual thing that J.K. Rowling took from Scottish mythology, and it's super, super cool.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. This book has made me like J.K. a lot more. Like the first two books, I was kind of like, okay, whatever. But like now I'm starting to understand, because the ending of this book is just like, really solid. So
right, no,
now I'm starting to
legit.
Like understand the hype. She really, it took her like, I think it took her two books, but now she's like really coming to her own.
All right, good. This is arguably the best book. So
yeah,
that's fine.
I can see why when I was asking people about the podcast and when I try to get guests on, I always ask like, what's your favorite book? Like literally everyone was like, it's either Azkaban or Half-Blood Prince is like what everybody says.
That's so fair.
I'm excited. Also, everyone says the fifth book is terrible. So
I don't agree with that.
Okay,
I have
good.
Issues with the fifth book because of certain things that happen in it.
Okay.
But as a whole, I like it as a book.
Yeah, I've heard other people say they like it a lot.
The fourth is my least favorite because it's like the sports book, and I'm not super into that.
That's why it was my favorite. I only saw the first four movies, and that's why it was my favorite, because it was the sports movie.
That's fair.
You'll soon hear when you listen to all these episodes, but I rant about Quidditch in every episode about how it's the worst, because I'm really passionate about sports, and it doesn't function as a sport. It just doesn't
You don't get
work.
Any Quidditch in our chapters, though, so you
I
don't
know,
have to
this
rant
is
about
be
it this
a,
time.
I'm going to be so happy during this episode. It's going to be great. I'm not going to be angry at anything. So basically Harry's super angsty at this point and he wants to kill Sirius Black. Ron tries to go all defense mode and like stands in front of Harry when Sirius
Ron
starts to confront him.
Ron keeps getting up with his broken leg like a fucking idiot.
He really does. He just keeps trying to stand up. It's like, Ron, your leg is broken. Just like,
I counted
calm
at
down.
Least three times in this one chapter.
Yes, it is at least three. I'm pretty sure I wrote it too. Somewhere in my notes, I have something like Ron keeps trying to stand up like
Sit
an idiot.
Sit the fuck down, Ron.
So he's like, you'll have to kill us all if you want to get to Harry. And Sirius says, there's only one murder that should take place tonight.
Which is just, come on, Sirius. Don't be melodramatic. You escaped from prison. Like, don't do this to yourself.
Like, I knew from the movies that Sirius is innocent. And the whole time this whole confrontation was going on where Sirius, like, continues to be creepy, I was like, dude, all of these people think that you're going to murder people and that you're not nice. I think you should probably be like, hey, wait, guys, I'm innocent. Let me explain what's going on. Rather than like every line was like, blah, 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 he said with a grimace, or like, blah, 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 he said with a smirk. It's like, Sirius, come on, cut the shit.
J.K. Rowling like really didn't want you to know that he was a good guy until that big reveal.
The very end, yeah. She really wanted to make sure this plot twist was a huge plot twist.
I think it's because she wanted to make Harry's anger legitimate.
That
and
makes
we're
sense.
Kind of seeing the story from Harry's perspective. So of course, like if he smiles, it looks like a grimace.
After Sirius mentions there should only be one murder that takes place, Harry's like, oh yeah, what about the 13 muggles you killed? Did Azkaban make you soft? So Harry, the 13-year-old kid, is talking shit to a person who allegedly murdered 15 people in one night.
Harry just like doesn't give a fuck
he
at
really
this point.
He really doesn't. He doesn't care about anyone or anything.
He's a sassy bitch.
Yeah, he really is.
There's a line when they first go into the Shrieking Shack where they're looking at all the destroyed furniture and stuff, and Harry goes, ghost didn't do this. No fucking shit, Harry.
He's just so angsty.
Sassy bastard.
It's really good. Hermione jumps in and tries to stop Harry, and he's like, leave me alone, he killed my mom and dad. Harry runs and tackles Black, which takes Sirius Black by so much surprise that he, like, doesn't defend it, which is great. Like, Sirius Black is not expecting it.
A bunch of 13-year-olds just start beating him up, yeah. Like, with their fists, and, like, a dude with a broken leg starts kicking him. What is happening in this situation? You have a wand, dude.
Yeah, I was gonna say, they're all wizards. They could have done something, but no, they're like, let's just gang up on this dude. So there's a giant scuffle. Everyone's punching Sirius Black, including Crookshanks, who's in yes. on it. Harry breaks free and gets his wand. So they didn't use their wands, because I think Sirius used Expelliarmus once they got in.
That's true.
I think that was okay. Okay, so they're like, let's beat him up. So Harry breaks free, gets his wand, and he holds Sirius at, like, wand point, I'm assuming, is what you yeah. call gunpoint with wands. And Sirius is like, oh, if you only knew the whole story, which is still so melodramatic. It's like, dude, just get on with it. You're about to be murdered and you're still trying to, like, come up with cool lines. Just tell him the truth.
You're too much of a cool guy, Sirius. We can't deal with this right now.
I mean, he's Gary Oldman, yeah. so he's pretty cool.
Gary Oldman in the movie, though, those cackles and stuff, he did a real good job.
I'm really excited to watch the movie now that I've read all
what's going on.
I also have no idea who plays Lupin or what Lupin looks like, so I'm really interested, because with a lot of the characters, like, I know the actor that plays them, so when I see Snape, mm-hmm. I just see Alan Rickman, and when I see Dumbledore, I just see the guy who played Dumbledore, and then the other guy who played Dumbledore.
It was going to be number one or number two.
So that it's nice for me to have a character that I don't think of the actor. That's like the
I'm
one thing
I'm curious how you
like
picture him from the book then, just from the description in the book.
Yeah, I feel like Lupin, I'm imagining like an old, like a super old dude. I feel like he has like long hair that he kind of like slicks back, but it's not necessarily because of gel. It's like mostly because it's greasy.
Okay, fair enough.
That's what I'm imagining. I don't know, but we'll have to see. All I know is that Lupin's the best, and I'm so sad that he's going away. He was too good for this world. So Crookshanks jumps onto Sirius Black. Harry's ready to kill him, and a voice inside Harry's head says, do it now, which is clearly Voldemort, and there is no other explanation.
I actually didn't even think of that, all right?
Oh, that's
I just
what
remember
I totally
thinking
think
Harry
is
like, I'm going to kill him. I'm like, you don't even know how to do that, bro.
That was my second thought. Do you know Avada Kedavra, or were you just going to be like Expecto Patronum on Sirius
He's
Black?
13, and that doesn't happen till later.
That's my long shot, because there's always this weird thing where they're like, is Harry evil? Where they try to throw in the whole Slytherin thing and all this like parcel tongue bullshit, but I don't know. My guess is Voldemort.
That's a fair guess.
That's just my guess for any like creepy voice.
Pretty
just,
much.
That's Voldemort, clearly.
I mean, you had a whole story in Chamber of Secrets where it was a dude talking through a diary yeah. to be creepy.
Yeah, so anything is possible.
Yeah.
They hear footsteps, they start to yell for help, and it's Lupin, which is nice. Lupin comes in, and he's like, where is he? And Sirius Black points at Ron.
Ron's like, what did I
Ron's
do?
Ron's like, what the heck did I do? I'm not important, I'm just Ron Weasley. So my thought is that this has to be Pettigrew's the rat, which I've known the whole time because of the movie. So Lupin then
That's
says,
fair.
"Where?" He points to Ron, and he's like, what? Unless you switched without telling me, which again, super ominous.
Just be honest with everyone right now.
Please. Lupin goes in and hugs Sirius Black, and all the kids are like, what the hell is going on? Mm-hmm. And Lupin's like, I didn't tell anyone that I've been covering up for you, says Hermione. Another, like, plot twists are just rolling in.
Yeah, it's just like plot twist after plot twist.
First off, Sirius Black says he's innocent. Then Lupin comes in and needs something from Ron, apparently, which is the whole Pettigrew thing. And then you find out Lupin's like friends with Sirius Black. Then you find out that Hermione's been covering for Lupin. It's like one paragraph with like four plot twists in it. It's absurd.
I imagine it as the scene in Rocky Horror where everyone is just yelling each other's names.
Oh, definitely.
That kind of chaos.
Yeah, that or in Reservoir Dogs where like it's the Mexican standoff and everyone's at gunpoint, but instead of guns, it's plot twists.
Yes.
Hermione says that Lupin has been helping Black get in and that he's a werewolf, so double plot twist.
That's also, it's super racist of Hermione. She's like, don't trust him. He's a werewolf. I'm like, Hermione, no. You're yeah. so much better than this normally.
It like goes on throughout the whole end of the book that like werewolves can't be trusted, but they never say why.
They're just regular human beings who turn into wolves.
Yeah, I guess they understand the whole like they turn into wolves thing at night. But like if you're a werewolf and you're a grown ass man and you've been a werewolf for a good chunk of your life, you will understand that you will take the necessary precautions, which Lupin did as a teacher. No one is in danger. The only reason that there was any issue on this particular night where he turns into a werewolf is because he's trying to, like, save people's lives. And he had to, like, rush out before he could take a potion.
That Snape was late to give him, too.
Yeah. All this thing where it's like, oh, you can't trust werewolves. You're right. It seems, like, strangely racist. Where it's just oh, he's a werewolf. Racist. Clearly not fit to be a teacher. It's like, hold on. He seems like the only good teacher that they've had besides McGonagall. That's the other thing I don't understand is, like, Hogwarts is, like, the only wizarding school. And they have a lot of really bad professors. Snape takes grudges with all of his students. And
He's not a bad teacher. He's just, he's not bad at his subject. He's just a bad human being.
Yeah. But he's supposed to be good, apparently. Eventually, there's going to be the whole big turn where Snape, you know, kills Dumbledore and then is a good guy and then says always and is like, I really liked your mom, Harry. This is all I know about Snape. But I know that he turns good. And I don't see it. I don't, but it's going to happen. We'll I know it there. Is because he's played by Alan Rickman. How can you not be good? You can't make a bad guy, Alan Rickman. Come on.
Except for in Die Hard.
Oh, I haven't seen
Hans
Die Hard.
Hans Gruber. He's the bad guy in Die Hard.
I got to see it. I've only seen Galaxy Quest and Harry Potter movies. So.
Oh, no.
Clearly, he's just a god. So Lupin clarifies that he hasn't been helping Sirius or wanting Harry dead, but he's like, but I am a werewolf.
Yeah, he's like, one for three, Hermione, not so great.
Yeah, it's like a super casual thing where he's just like, well, you were wrong, except for that whole werewolf thing. Props. He was like, how long have you known? And Hermione was like, oh, I've known since Snape made us research werewolves in depth. And it was like,
fuck you, Snape.
That makes sense. Lupin says that Snape did that on purpose so that people could find out and, you know, clearly it worked. Then you learn later why, because Snape hates Lupin a lot. My note at the end of this all caps was, this explains so much. Like, all of these things,
absolutely.
Everything has been explained in one giant standoff.
Yeah, you get more Snape grudge background later on in the books too, so it gets real good, but this is the first taste of it.
Yeah, the Snape grudge, which just like continues to build like more and more. I'm glad that there was much more explaining this time. Mm-hmm. He seems like just this like nerd that got picked on and just like took it way too far in like hating his bullies. Because from all the descriptions of these four dudes, like they don't seem like the worst people. But I don't know. He took this one trick like really badly and it's like shaping his entire life now.
And also Lupin, I think also at one point he's like, oh, he didn't like James. He was jealous of his Quidditch play. I'm like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was the whole like people trying to get him murdered by a werewolf thing. Like that seems like enough for him to be upset.
I'd be pissed about that too. I still have grudges from people in high school. So
yeah, but
I'm
no
not
one tried
to
have
talk.
You like mauled by a rabid animal. So
that's true. I hold grudges without that. So I'm worse.
Yeah. So if someone had done that, who knows? Maybe you'd like hate their children and like want their kid to like get detention a lot or something.
Sounds familiar. Sounds about right.
So then Lupin goes on. He's like, did you notice I was always sick on the full moon and that the boggart was the moon? And that I literally closed the book at this point because the most ominous of all the things that J.K. Rowling was that Lupin's thing that he feared the most from the boggart was a silvery orb. And I had two thoughts of this. First off, I was like, whoa, that's really good. And second, I was like, okay, the moon is not a silvery orb.
Harry's also a really bad narrator. Like, Harry's perspective is terrible. He'd be like, that looks like a balloon. You're like, no, Harry, what are you talking about?
Yeah, like, oh, it's my dad. And I was like, no, that's you doing that. You like, don't, come on.
Dumbass.
The silvery orb thing, I was griping about this because I was like, the moon has craters and is the moon. But I was talking to my girlfriend about it and she made the good claim that like the thing that he would fear is like the sight of a full moon and from the ground, like it looks just like a glowing orb.
Yeah.
When you look at the moon, it's bright enough on a full moon where it doesn't necessarily look like the moon itself.
Just like you can't see the fire coming out of the sun, but you see the glowing sun.
Exactly. Yeah. So I like understand that aspect. But that being said, when you say silvery orb, I was imagining just like literally a chrome sphere floating through the air. And I was like, what the fuck is this thing? Like, this could be so many things. I'm so confused. And then it was like, oh, it was the moon.
What does Harry think it is? Does he think it's a crystal ball or something? And then
he had no
in the
idea.
Divinate-
it just said the two or three times you see it, it just says silvery orb. That's literally it. And it was the same depiction every single time, because I've noted in my notes every single time, I was like, what is this silvery orb? Like, it was so heavy-handed, ominous that it
you're like, I need to know what it is right now.
Yeah. Clearly this is something. I had no idea what it was, but Moon was not on the short list of things.
Well, there you go. I'm glad you're still surprised by stuff even after seeing the movies.
Yeah, so that's why I'm really excited to get past the fourth book, because I know like vaguely what happens in five, but six and seven, I know literally nothing. So I'm really excited to see all the major plot twists. So I'm glad that I don't know everything, so then things will come up. One thing I don't know, which I wrote in my notes, I don't know who Bellatrix is. I know she exists, and I was trying to figure out who Crookshanks is as a human, and I was like, is Crookshanks Bellatrix? Because I was like, this is the only like major character whose name I haven't heard yet in the book, but it just turns out Crookshanks is a really smart cat. So Hermione says she noticed both things when he was like, did you notice I was sick? Or because my barter was the moon? She's like, I noticed both.
Like, yeah, bitch. You checked both of those things off the list, and I was really, really not surprised.
Yeah. Lupin says that all the staff knows about the werewolf thing, and he just wants to explain himself, so he gives the wands back and is like, now do you think I'm going to just be chill about this? And they're like, okay, fine. Lupin says he found them using the Marauder's map, and he also reveals that he helped make it, which this is something I did not see coming at all. So he mentions the whole nickname thing. So he
says, can we talk about how terrible those nicknames are for a second?
Yeah, pretty rough.
Because they're so bad. They're just
the nicknames
awful.
Are, it's Moony, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs. So Moony is his nickname because he was a werewolf. So like the moon, lame.
So dumb.
Padfoot, which apparently is a dog. I've never referred to.
Dogs have pads on their feet.
I would never refer to that at all. And then Wormtail, he's a rat, but his tail looks like a worm. So he's a worm tail.
Because rats have bald tails, I guess.
And then Harry's dad is a deer. So it's Prongs. Prongs, I was like, what is he, a fork? I was like, is he some sort of kitchen utensil? It's like, no, he's a stag. Also, I knew Harry's Patronus was, I thought it was a deer the whole time, and it turns out it's like a male deer. It's still kind of lame.
It's still pretty lame.
But
I think there's a whole like animal guardian aspect that J.K. Rowling really dug into when she was doing research for the Patronuses.
Uh-huh.
But I still think that's a super dumb one.
Yeah, I feel like you should have something more intimidating, like a freaking lion or something scary. Oh, it's a dad deer with a lot of horns. He's so majestic.
It can ram stuff, I guess.
Yeah, a ram would be way better. It'd be so much more intimidating.
Someone has a ram later on in the series.
Nice. I hope it's
super late in the series. So
I'm gonna guess it's Luna Lovegood. I don't know.
I'm gonna tell you it's a character you haven't met yet.
That's why I'm guessing it's Luna Lovegood.
It's not Luna Lovegood.
Damn it. Maybe it's Cho Chang because we've only kind of met her. We know that she has a pretty face. And it sucks at Quidditch.
Poor Cho Chang. If that's her only legacy, I feel so bad for that girl.
It's okay. She's the only person you ever meet from Ravenclaw. So, you know, she's important.
Well, Gilderoy Lockhart, but you don't know that.
Well, Gilderoy Lockhart was from Ravenclaw?
Ravenclaw. Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous. He's so stupid.
He's smart enough to trick all those people into thinking he's super smart.
I feel like that would be cunning, though. I feel like that would be Slytherin.
Yeah. He probably argued against
he
it.
Sucks.
Whatever.
I really don't like him. I'm so glad he's not coming back ever. I hope he never comes back into play.
Yeah.
Because he's so bad. So he says that he helped create the map. He says he knew about the cloak because James used it all the time. He says he saw the kids on the map and he saw them with someone else. Obviously, this has to be Pettigrew, but they're not saying it. Lupin asks to see the rat. Obviously, Pettigrew, but they're not saying it. Ron asks, what does he have to do with it? And then Lupin says, everything, which is so good. So good. Oh my God.
Oh God.
Some of the lines in the end were fantastic, but I think that was my favorite. Mm-hmm. The super calculated one word answer that tells so much. Oh, incredible.
Everything. I feel like the delivery isn't as good as you just did it in the movie.
Oh
so.
Man. I was really expecting like cheesy, like turn. And then in my mind, it would be like dramatic zoom in on the face, but like turn and then be like everything. man. So Black reveals that he is an animagus and that the rat is an animagus by the name of Peter Pettigrew. End scene.
What?
This latter half of the book also has a really good, like, every chapter ending on a blah. Like, every chapter ends on the beginning note from Law and Order SVU. Every chapter's like, dun dun, and then it moves on to the next page.
She was, like, really into those, I think, in this one. She finally hit her stride, so she's like, every chapter at the end should be very dramatic.
Yeah, because it's really good.
Small children are reading this.
I like when they do that, because I alternate between reading this book and then listening to it on the audiobook if I'm, like, at work or doing laundry or something. And I really like when audiobooks have chapters that end on big notes, because then they, like, have to wait 5 seconds so that you know it's the next chapter. So it would be like, he's a rat and his name is Peter Pettigrew. Chapter 18. Nerdy Worm Town. It's so good.
Hey, let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors who make this show possible.
So, chapter 18, Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs, the four worst nicknames ever.
Terrible.
It starts off with the squad being like, what? No way. This isn't Peter Pettigrew. We clearly haven't seen the third movie. So, Black just fucking hates Pettigrew. He's saying all these, like, super creepy and ominous things, which are really bad when they still think Black is just, like, a murderous, rampaging
human. Just trying to kill people.
Because he's like, I want to commit the murder I was imprisoned for.
Oh, so dramatic, dude.
But also really good. It was a really good one. So Ron, this was my note about Ron trying up. I said, quote, Ron tries to get up for the 54th time, but can't because his leg is broken.
Sit down, Ron. He like literally he gets up in that scene to walk out. And you're like, where the fuck do you think you're going? No one's going to help you leave in this situation.
It's really not going to work. So the squad is basically not buying the story. Hermione notes that Pettigrew is not on the list of registered animagi, which is apparently a thing you have to do. Like, you have to become officially registered, be like, hey guys, I can turn into an animal. And Lupin very conveniently says, well, there are three people who are unregistered animagi, and then starts explaining the entire backstory.
Also, so Hermione goes, oh, there were only seven people in this century who became animagi. I'm like, and they all went to Hogwarts? Like, what the fuck is happening in this situation? You know McGonagall is one of them. So it's just, oh God, so irritating. She uses it as a plot point at one point, and then it just, everyone becomes animagus at the end, or however you pronounce it.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it either. Saying magi because I'm thinking, like, the magi from Jesus. I'm hoping they all come with gold, frankincense, and myrrh or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But also, if I was a wizard and all these kids just become animagi, obviously I'm going to do whatever illegal thing it needs to do to become an animagi, because you could become something dope. I don't understand why none of them became birds so they could fly.
Well, so the thing is, you don't get to pick what your form is.
Oh,
it's kind of like your Patronus, where it's based off of your personality and stuff. Like, who would be like, oh yeah, I totally want to be a rat. That seems super cool.
Here's the other thing. So Peter Pettigrew is a rat. Mm-hmm. He's a rat. His spirit animal is rat, which is very common for a person that tells on someone. And no one at any point in time, especially Sirius Black, is like, I got an idea. We'll make the rat the guy who's got the secret. He thought that Lupin was the spy. It's like, yeah, clearly it's not the guy whose spirit animal is rat. What if someone's Patronus was like a tattletaler? Like, it's pretty much the same thing. It's like, oh, what's your Patronus? It's like, oh, it's a guy who like tells secrets that you're not supposed to. Huh, I should tell him the secret of my best friend.
You seem cool. Let's do that.
It's like no one saw this coming, really. Like, no one at all.
I mean, I guess the foresight is not a wizard's specialty.
No, clearly not, because no one ever sees any of these plot holes coming.
Yeah.
No one ever does until it's the end of the school year. Then everyone learns. I love that it's always the end of the school year when shit goes down. So then Lupin starts explaining the whole backstory thing. He says he was bitten as a young kid, and only recently has there been potion to solve this. So Snape's potion has let him keep his consciousness when he turns into a werewolf. He still will turn into a werewolf, but he won't just like completely like bug out and forget what happened. He just becomes a nice wolf, and he just stays in his office locked in there until he's not a wolf anymore.
It's an adorable image, just Lupin chilling in wolf form, curled up under his desk. It's so
exactly.
Cute.
Yeah, so Lupin says he couldn't go to Hogwarts until Dumbledore was the headmaster, because Dumbledore Dumbledore then made arrangements for him, further proving that Dumbledore is just like the best. Literally.
Just a chill ass motherfucker.
Yeah. He describes that the passageway to the Shrieking Shack is guarded by the Whomping Willow so that no one would be harmed by seeing, you know, him as a werewolf so he wouldn't tear him to death. But the whole no one would be harmed thing, this tree beats the shit out of everything.
It's a homicidal tree.
Like, couldn't they have just made a secret passageway with a normal tree? Like, does it have to be with tree that murders humans or?
Yeah. I mean, I guess they're like, well, death by a tree is better than being bitten by a werewolf. So I guess that's cool.
I would totally rather be bitten by a werewolf because then you become a werewolf.
Well, unless you get mauled to death, then not so much.
There's the two options, though, is like if you're beaten to death by a tree, you can't become an evil tree. You just die.
That's true.
But there is the play with werewolves that you just get, you know, you become a werewolf and then you're Taylor Lautner from Twilight and things are great.
I guess they're just not into that. I mean, look how racist Hermione was against werewolves earlier on.
Oh, man. So true. They brought Lupin back to the shack before transforming so that he could just be a wolf in peace and howl and tear up an abandoned house or whatever. Lupin says that he only had three friends at Hogwarts, Sirius, Peter, and James, and that the other three illegally became animagi as a form of solidarity. So they would just be like, yo, dude, we'll be animals with you. It's chill. So it took them 3 years to figure it out. But by their fifth year, they all had become animagi. And they would join Lupin whenever he transformed. Peter would be the rat and scurry around and touch the knot that freezes the Whomping Willow. The others would go through. And then they would just kind of chill in the Shrieking Shack. So you reveal that Sirius is Padfoot because of the dog, Peter is Wormtail because of the rat, James is Prongs, and Harry's like, huh, I wonder what Prongs could be.
I think it's interrupted immediately when that situation happens.
Because can't give him any time to figure it out. Gotta immediately have it just like thrown away so that it can be a plot twist later.
Save it for a later cliffhanger. Totally.
Yeah,
okay.
I had it. So Harry begins to ask himself what Prongs could be, but Hermione cuts him off to say that it's very dangerous that they did this. It's like, great, Hermione. Thanks a lot for that stunning piece of commentary.
Putting out the obvious there.
Yeah, really, really rough there. So Lupin says he knows and he feels bad because he violated Dumbledore's trust. He says that's why all this year he hasn't told Dumbledore that Sirius was an animagus, because he said that he would then have to admit that he was wronging Dumbledore behind his back all these years by not telling him what's going on.
I feel like this is also how Dumbledore gets all of his followers, by doing something nice for them and kind of like blackmailing them into being like, well, I did you that super cool thing that changed your life, so now you owe me like a real big favor.
It's very true. It's very true. Lupin says Snape has been right not to trust him, and Sirius is really confused. He's like, what? And Lupin's like, oh, Snape is a teacher here now. And Sirius is like, are you fucking kidding me? He mentions that Snape hates Sirius because of the trick that almost killed him, which is the third time that this thing has been mentioned. And Sirius says, you know, serves him right, because he was trying to get us expelled. Basically, you find out that Black is the only one that did the trick. And he told Snape how to stop the Whomping Willow and get to the tunnel, which would have meant that Snape would have meant with like fully werewolf mode Lupin, aka death by werewolf.
Would not have been good. Could have been terrible.
So James then ran in and saved him, but Snape saw Lupin at the end of the hallway or whatever, so he knew what was going on and all the stuff. So Dumbledore had to kind of force Snape to be silent about it and not tell anyone. Hermione's like, oh, so that's why Snape doesn't like you? Because he thought you were in on the joke? And then Snape, who's been in the room the whole time, takes off the invisibility cloak and says, that's right, and the end of the chapter.
Such a dramatic bitch. Why do they gotta keep doing this? Just like whips off the invisibility cloak. Yeah. Hello, you son of a bitch.
It brings up my favorite movie trope, which is like person that enters the room at the perfect time to say a dramatic line. Because I always imagine in those things, like the person is just like behind the door with their ear on the crack of the door. Like, okay, wait for it. Like, what's going to be the big boom? And like, how long was Snape there just like chilling with the invisibility cloak? Like, ha ha ha. I hope they talk about me.
I think at one point they hear a creak.
Oh.
Like something creaks and Ron's like, what the fuck was that? And everyone's like, murder in the room. No one cares.
I see. I get it. And that dramatic cliffhanger of a note is how we're going to end this episode. But fear not, because we will be back in 2 weeks of posting time, but 5 seconds of recording time, because once we stop stop. I'm going to keep going and we're going to record the rest of this. But you lovely listeners need to wait 2 weeks because I need to edit this and everything. But Julia, thank you so much for being a part of this episode.
It's my pleasure.
It's been great. I'm excited to do the rest of this with you.
Gotta get some time traveling hijinks.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Right? So crazy. Everyone listening, thank you so much for listening. If you want to follow Julia on her podcasting adventures, it's Spirits Podcast and it's fantastic and I love it a lot. And it's also a bi-weekly one, comes out on Wednesdays. Super good. Is there anything else you want to plug, Julia, or is that kind of your main deal?
No, that's it. Just come listen to Spirits. We talk about boozy spirits and legends and stuff.
Definitely.
That was not a good sell of my own podcast. Okay. But
there's enough words. There's a lots of good sells out there of it. They do a story like that Disney movie Maui that's coming out or already came out by the time this podcast came on. It's like a happy Disney story. Turns out there's like vagina monsters in it. So the real story, way worse. That's definitely been my favorite episode because it's like, here's a Disney movie. Just kidding. There is literal death by vagina. Like someone gets murdered by a vagina. So if that isn't a good enough sell for Spirits, I don't know what is.
And that's why we die.
Yes, that is why everyone dies now, because someone died by vagina, and now that was the first death that ever happened, according to mythology. But yes, everyone, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time. If you want to follow along with the podcast, you can subscribe on iTunes. You can rate it as well, and that's super awesome and does a whole lot. You can follow us on Twitter at PotterlessPod. And until next time, as they say in the wizarding world, wizard on! Potterless was created by Mike Schubert. It is hosted by Mike Schubert. It is edited by Mike Schubert. It is produced by Mike Schubert, as well as Leanne Davis, Griffin Meckelberg, and Michael Baloff, whose mothers always let them stay out past curfew when they ask nicely. And the music is by Bettina Campomanes. Thank you guys so much for listening. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. We're also on Twitter and Facebook at facebook.com/potterless. And if you want to pledge money to the podcast to support it and help make it a better product, you can go support our Patreon, patreon.com/potterless, and you get cool little bonus content. If not, no big deal. But anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening, and until next time, wizard on!